Welcome to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means Subcommittee on General Government. Today is June 28, 2017, and today we will be holding a number of work sessions, public hearings, and work sessions. So we're going to begin with opening up a work session on SB 5536, Secretary of State. And LFO, can you get us started, please?
Well, thank you, Mr. Co-Chair and Subcommittee members. Senate Bill 5536 is the budget bill for the Secretary of State. We've posted the standard materials that you've seen for budget bills, work sessions. So on OLIS, you'll find our recommendation memo. You will find the key performance measures, and you will find the amendments that we are proposing or recommending that you adopt. I'd like to just mention that the Secretary of State budget is a budget that is funded from a number of sources and has a number of different programs that are housed within the Secretary of State. As a reminder, the major programs in the Secretary of State are the Elections Division, which is supported primarily by General Fund, the Archives and Audits Divisions, which are funded primarily by other funds, assessments, and the Corporation Division, which is funded primarily through fees and charges to businesses that are register with the Secretary of State under law. There's also then a central administrative area of the agency, the Operations Division, that supports all of these different entities as well as the Executive Office of the Secretary. The recommendations, because of the fact that this has a number of different divisions, the recommendations memos are a little longer perhaps than some of the agencies you've seen. But if there aren't any questions before we start, I would like to go through our standard memo and go through what the LFO recommendations are. If you have had time to look at the recommendation memo that comes before the report, I have tried to highlight some of the major elements there, so you have them all in one place, because I know this report is perhaps not the most user-friendly in terms of finding things right away. But in general, we are recommending a budget for the Secretary of State that totals from all funds a total of $73,838,883, and that supports 212 positions, which is 211.89 FTE. In terms of comparisons with the current service level, this is unlike many of the budgets you may have had. This is an agency that does have additional funding over the current service level. In terms of general fund, the amount is a 6.9% increase. However, it's important to note that there are some programs that are not included in the current service level that the agency is operating on an ongoing basis. So the increase over CSL, it may be a little bit misleading in this particular case, but that's the figure that we have. If there are no questions, I would like to ask you please to turn to page 2 of 18 in the work session presentation report, where we talk about the Administrative Services Division. This is the division that operates the central support functions for the entire agency. We're recommending a budget of just approximately $20.3 million, 63 positions, and this portion of the budget is primarily funded from other funds that are assessed to the various divisions of the Secretary of State, as well as approximately $2.7 million in general fund. The first recommendation that we have specific to changes or adjustments from the current service level is found on page 3 of 18. And this was a request that the Secretary of State submitted to increase staffing in the Administrative Services Division. The original request was for 6 positions. So these were 6 positions, thank you, that were not included in CSL. Our recommendation is to approve three of these. We believe that three of these, two of these are quite critical to continuing the operations of the Secretary of State, and another is a position that the Secretary has asked for in order to assist in policy making. But we are hereby recommending that you appropriate $500,000 general fund and increase the other fund's limitation by $201,429 to provide support for the costs of the three individuals and very limited services and supply costs. The individuals that we are recommending that you approve include two IS or information systems specialist positions that are currently employed in the budget and that work on developing systems solutions for the elections division. That's why they're general fund, because the elections division is general fund supported primarily. And we didn't know, or you didn't know 2 years ago, whether they would need to continue these positions. Their plan for their election division systems were still uncertain. Now that there's more certainty and that certain systems that they had thought they might outsource, they're going to keep in-house, we think it's important to retain those positions. So we're recommending that, as well as the establishment of a position in the executive office for policy development and analysis, which is funded by the other funds. On page 4 of 16, we are also recommending package 102. This is a package that reclassifies six positions in the agency's administrative services division to better reflect position responsibilities and job requirements. What this means is these positions are being, you know, what's actually happening is these positions are being reclassified upward generally. And the cost of doing that in the current biennium is $19,621 other funds. This cost will increase in the future, but in the current budget, this is the cost of making those position adjustments. The next package on page 6 of 18, this is the agency requested initially a higher amount, but then modified or reduced the request to $90,000 to fund procurement and implementation of a new procurement system that has will assist the agency in its procurement functions and accounting for payments on contracts. This is an effort that other state agencies are also involved in, and you may have seen some of their requests in other budgets before you. It is funded through other funds.
Senator Johnson.
Forgive me, Mr. Chair, for coming in and then going back out, and we're just at that point in the session. But I wanted to ask about the DAS procurement piece of this. Are there administrative costs associated with DAS's activities with respect to the agencies? I draw on my experience as once upon a time having a train set that we had asked DAS to help us sell, and they wanted 25% commission. So what I'm trying to figure out is, are there charges associated with these activities wherein they're supposed to be helping the agencies and it's actually costing the agencies more money?
Well, this particular package is not directly addressing the, I think, the question that you have. This will allow the, improve the ability or the procurement, the monitoring of procurement contracts for the agency once it's implemented. And I'm not aware of any offsetting activities in the DAS agency itself.
Okay.
But I will try to see if I can find out for you.
Cool. Thank you.
The next item, page 6 of 18, is a request that we are recommending $83,000 in general fund for the ongoing costs of the election night reporting system that the legislature approved in 2016 and that first became operative for the general election in 2016. This is a ongoing cost of the maintenance contract. The original purchase cost was higher. We've taken the cost of the original purchase cost out, which you'll see in a minute, but we are recommending that this package be supported and that it can be continued to operate. Package 801 on page 7 is the 801 package that is that you've seen in almost, I assume, all of the budgets that have come before you. It's the package that reduces general fund expenditures in order to help balance the statewide budget. We have a reduction here in administrative services. Oh, I'm sorry. That's 802. Excuse me. Package 801 is a IT. I'm sorry. That's an IT request. The secretary came in late with a later request for permission to spend other funds' monies that it has, $250,000, to acquire and implement 3 new security systems that they have found are needed to protect security in their systems. These include a network access control system, a web security gateway, and a network full packet capture system. We recommend that you approve this request on a one-time basis so that they can acquire the systems that they've found to be in need of. If there are ongoing maintenance costs, they will need to come back and request those. We do not have information at this point on what those ongoing costs may be, or I did not have that information, but this was a concern that these IT security enhancements were needed.
Johnson.
Question of the professional staff, in what forum would they make that request?
That forum would be they would need to request a policy option package in their budget in order to include ongoing maintenance costs.
So that wouldn't be then until 2019?
That would be most likely the case, yes.
Is there a relief valve on this if they find that things are not working well? Can they come to an e-board? Is there an out here?
The agency is always able to come to the emergency board if it needs to make or request budget adjustments from you. This original, the system is being paid by other funds. Okay. If they have other funds available to pay maintenance costs that come due before the 2019 session, they would be able to request the emergency board for an expenditure limitation increase.
Okay. Thank you.
No, you're good.
We're now on page 8 of 18. We're still in the Administrative Services Division area of the budget, and these are technical and revenue adjustments that we do want to make. We're asking you to approve a reduction of $347,900 general fund and $624,000 other funds. These are expenditures that were built into the agency's budget through the current service level process that should not have been there because the expenditures really were not repetitive. So these are expenditures for things that the agency doesn't need and were identified as one-time costs. So this can be viewed. That's why I have it in a package called Technical Corrections, even though it is clearly an adjustment to the budget. But it is to correct an error in the budget, or two errors in the budget as it was developed. That completes the discussion of the Administrative Services Division. The next division is the Elections Division, which is the general fund supported division. We're recommending a budget of about $14.4 million and 20 positions. General fund will be slightly more than half of this total. Package 105 is an elections position true-up package that reclassifies three positions in the elections division to reflect the current position responsibilities and job requirements. There's no cost to this in this biennium, but we do request that you acknowledge that package. The next package is package 106. Package 106 continues payments to counties for the Oregon Motor Voter program. When the legislature passed Motor Voter in the 2015 session, they included funds to counties to assist them in their costs that they have incurred as a result of the program, those costs being having higher, larger voter rolls and the costs associated with mailing ballots and materials to them and processing them, et cetera. We are recommending that you appropriate $106,000 to counties to assist in their additional costs from the establishment of the Motor Voter Program. This is somewhat reduced from the request level, but it was the amount that could fit within the dollars that are available to the subcommittee for balancing its budgets. Package 12 is package 801, the LFO analyst adjustments. In this case, we do have a general fund reduction to help balance the statewide general fund budget. We are recommending you reduce the Elections Division General Fund by $250,000, and that would be in services and supplies. And again, you've seen Package 801 adjustments in general fund budgets throughout the session. The next division of the agency, which I am now on page 13 of 18, if you're following, is the Audits Division. The Audits Division recommendation is that you this is an other funds funded division. It's funded through state assessments and in some cases direct billings for audits. The total budget we are recommending is $21.5 million, 72 positions. This is a current service level budget. There's no additions or subtractions to the current service level that we are recommending. The next division is the Archives Division, which is also almost exclusively other funds from assessments and charges for services. We have two packages that we're recommending to the Archives Division, only one of which affects the expenditures in this biennium. The first is Package 110, Blue Book. You had heard that sales of the Blue Book printed edition, the revenues from those sales are not sufficient anymore to cover the costs of the printing and publishing of the paper copies of the Blue Book. The agency requested $50,000 in general fund. We've spoken to the agency and have determined that they do have other funds from assessments available to fund these costs in the upcoming biennium. So we are recommending that you increase their other funds expenditure limitation by $50,000 for the purposes of continuing to print printed editions of the Blue Book.
I just want to put in a plug for the Blue Book. I think over time, some of the center stuff, the pictures and some of the more expensive drivers have added to the cost. But it surprises me what a valuable tool the Blue Book is. And I know for people that are less Neanderthal than I am, they can say, get it online. There isn't anything quite like holding the Blue Book and having it available. I use it practically every day in discharging my legislative responsibilities. I think there might be some cost accommodation if they looked at skinning it up a little bit. It doesn't have to have all those four-color pictures, but what a valuable tool.
Mr. Co-Chair, if I could just ask Mr. Bender, historically, what is the trend in expenses for the Blue Book? Have they been going up? Have they been going down? My sense is generally that printing costs have been going down of late, even with more color and options for in-house typesetting and everything else.
I don't have the numbers to give you, but I do know that the number of copies of the Blue Book that they've been ordering has been going down. So they have responded to the decline in demand for printed copies by reducing the printing runs and the size of those runs. However, there is this gap in the budget.
Thank you.
The other package 111 on page 16, is a reclassification of one Archives Division position that does not have additional costs involved in the current biennium. The last and the final division in the agency is in the order that we have it in our budget system, is the corporation division. Corporation division, we're recommending a budget of $10 million, 35 positions, 35 FTE. This division receives no general fund. It is funded by other funds that are also in many cases transferred to the general fund because this is the business registration fee, which is a revenue source that is shared with the general fund and the agency. We have a recommendation to package 801. We are recommending that you increase their other funds expenditure limitation by $240,000 to reflect increases costs in credit card merchant fees. The budget, as it they have discovered that the current service level budget is not sufficient to cover their costs for that. There are funds available that primarily due to the elimination of some of the monies that were in the budget that were in there in error, we're able to reallocate these for these costs, which are costs that the agency would not be able to avoid absent requiring people to pay in cash. And that concludes our recommendations on the expenditures in this budget. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Questions from the the committee? Representative Fabe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So in the elections division, there was a policy option package that we talked about a few months ago about increasing general fund support given that HAVA dollars are going away. And it doesn't look like that's in there, so I just wanted to confirm that.
You are correct.
Right, okay.
That is something that just couldn't be afforded this time.
Okay. And can one follow? On the package 105 that we did approve, that was the reclasses of the positions. Can you just remind me what the impetus behind that was? What's the driving rationale for those reclassing those positions?
The reclassification of the positions was requested in order to better reflect the responsibilities that are currently being required of these positions, which have changed over time, and they believe that they are classified at too low a level. This is a situation where by moving these positions up classification, there won't be costs in the current biennium. That's why there's no dollars involved here. But as these persons if individuals remain in the positions and move to higher steps, they will be eligible for higher salaries than they would have been absent the reclassifications.
Representative Marsh.
Thank you, Co-Chair. I just need a little bit more information on some of the performance measures. In particular, performance measure 2 and 3, which address audit cost savings and audit efficiency, appear to be performance measures that expect that an audit will result in specific findings. And if so, is that an appropriate performance measure? I mean, what we want audits to improve agencies. We want their recommendations to be implemented. But it seems I'm a little bit uncomfortable with the idea that the outcomes would be part of a performance measure, because that seems like it might drive the audits in some ways.
I know we typically address KPMs later in the presentation, but as long as you're okay.
Yeah, we can get that one, then we'll go back to it so we can finish up.
Yes.
Okay.
I just kept going through the PowerPoint.
No, I'm sorry. I just wanted to make sure what the process you wanted to follow here. There are KPMs that are also been posted, and you were representative referring, I believe, to KPMs 2 and 3.
Yes.
The agency or the audits division has looked to trying to findings where it's possible that there would be dollar savings to the state. And I believe that, one of the purposes of choosing audits, of what you want to look into, is with limited resources, is to try to be most effective and to try to look into topics that have a potential for having larger monetary returns in terms of savings to the state or not. These are the KPMs that that are in place. The agency did not request any changes to them, and though the agency did note that they're going to be the new secretary is going to be reviewing KPMs and targets in the coming year, and may propose some KPM changes with his biennial budget request. So LFO has not made recommended changes. You can certainly do that here in this meeting, and the secretary is here in case you have any questions about how he feels, you know, about these.
Follow up.
Yes, go ahead.
Thank you, Co-Chair. On those two measures, the last report, we're showing a very significant a target that's significantly above where we are currently. Did the secretary make those changes, or where do those recommendations come from?
Those recommended target levels are target levels that the budget has had for some time. The increase that you see there is that the reports are reported on an annual basis, mm-hmm. and it turns out that there are significant variation from one year to another, but over a period of time, these will average out to a much higher level than the amount that was in the last reported target. So the amounts that are in here are continuations of existing targets. We did not think that they were unreasonable targets for the agency to attempt to obtain. The lower numbers that you see there are the fact that they do fluctuate. There were some years where they were way above 30. And I can get you more, you know, I have it right here. Mm-hmm. Let me get you some more detail.
No problem.
Thank you.
So we're going to be going through the KPMs in a little bit. So can we put a push pin in this one so that we can move forward, and then we'll get right into that, if that's okay with you?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. So.
So then, Mr. Co-Chair, I don't want to interrupt.
Please.
Are you ready for a recommendation?
I'm ready for a recommendation.
I would move LFO's recommendation to Senate Bill 5536.
Co-Chair Smith has moved the LFO recommendations to SB 5536. Discussions? Representative Gump.
I defer to the Senator.
Well, play through.
Thank you. Mr. Co-Chair, I had a question that I hope perhaps either the Secretary or somebody in his staff can help answer for me. And it regards an article in Forbes magazine that was published in April, which was sometime since we have seen the Secretary. And it talks about Oregon's self-promotion PR machine, listing different agencies and how much money is being spent on public relations and advertising. And it surprised me to see the Secretary of State on that list with what they claim in this article is nearly $3 million in advertising. I did share this question with the Secretary previously and indicated that I would be asking him about that during this hearings, and I wanted to give them an opportunity to comment on this article, which asserts that we're spending millions and millions of dollars on advertising in this budget.
Okay. Mr. Secretary, if you don't mind, please.
This just shows the levels per year.
Mr. Co-Chairs, I'm Dennis Richardson, Secretary of State, and members of the committee, and Representative Gomberg. We did research that, and if I have your permission, I'd like to have Steve Elzinga be able to answer that for us.
Thank you.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, my name is Steve Elzinga, Government and Legal Affairs Director for the Secretary of State. After we met with Representative Gomberg, we reached out to the writer of that article and asked for a spreadsheet with all the expenses that was used to calculate the total dollar amount. That we then took that spreadsheet, and for every line item that was over $10,000, we went back in our books and found the exact purchase that was associated with that. And what we found was the vast majority of the spending on that was related to printing of the voter's pamphlet, which is, you know, $400,000, $500,000 per issue. A significant chunk was also related to printing of other things like voter registration cards, annual corporate mailers that are sent for renewal of those type of mailers. And we would be happy, we have the spreadsheet and we will be submitting that onto the record for the subcommittee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I found the article rather damning, and I welcome the secretary's opportunity to try and clarify. These are the kind of things that indeed give state government and our budgeting process a black eye, absent some clarification. I don't think that the voter's pamphlet or the blue book should be categorized as advertising, but here we are. So thank you for following up on that question.
So, Senator Johnson.
If this is on the same topic, I'll wait because I have a different topic.
Actually, it is, and if I could just go. Thank you, Senator. So these numbers come out of the checkbook off of the transparency page, and I've run into this before too. There's a category called, I believe it's called, printing, publishing, and advertising. And so there's a difference between the Secretary of State buying TV ads saying, hey, why don't you register to vote or something like that, and printing of the voter's pamphlet. And I wish that that we could sharpen our pencil a little bit on that category in the checkbook, because what Representative Gomberg is trying to get at here is an important thing, and you're being unfairly singled out for something that you shouldn't be guilty of. But anyway, I wish we could sharpen our pencil on that.
Okay. Thanks. Senator Johnson.
Thank you. This is perhaps a question for Mr. Bender. I'm a little bit perplexed. There is a letter at our place, and I was perusing it as I sat down. I had not seen it prior to arrival here, so I'm a little tiny bit mystified as to what the DAS reductions are and what's the context in this letter. I don't know what that means.
Unfortunately, I have not seen this letter either. If I may look at it just for a minute to see what this is. This, I know, not included in this bill, but included in an end of session bill in order to implement some of the recommendations for cost containment, there will be certain across-the-board reductions that are anticipated to agency budgets based on requiring slowdowns in hiring and in reducing inflation that's built into the budget for services and supplies. These reductions, if they are what if that is what the secretary is referring to, are not included in this bill, and they are applied equally to all agencies on an across-the-board basis and are not specific to any particular program.
May I respond? Oh. That's extremely helpful. Thank you, Mr. Bender. I have been one of the folks watching cost containment very aggressively this session, and as long as this is not part of today's bill, this gives us ample opportunity to have a broader discussion. I think all of us are interested in finding economies within our state budget, both in actual dollar terms, but also in the architecture of how we budget and how we appropriate. If we end up crippling some of our core responsibilities, elections, in the first paragraph of this letter, I think that's something that would benefit from additional legislative scrutiny. But if this is not part of today's bill, we shouldn't stop getting your budget passed. But I think there may be other forums where this issue can be raised.
Right. Well, Mr. Co-Chairs and Senator Johnson, it is not part of the bill, but it is a unique way that I've never experienced in the time that I was in the legislature, where Ways and Means comes up with the budgets, they get passed, and then later on, through another bill, they get taken away. Some would refer to that as bait and switch, but I would mention that in our instance, the suggested amount that's going to be taken back from us from the Elections Division It is $435,525, which certainly affects the budget that you have prepared. And then from other funds that's been allocated to the Archives Division, it's the Audits Division. From the Audits Division was $1,151,452, which is a major reduction from our ability to accomplish the goals of tracking the people's money and helping to ensure that audits are conducted as they should be. And so here we are today with this bill, and I'm grateful for the work that's been put in and for this budget. I'm surprised that DAS, through this other mechanism, will be taking back a substantial amount, which could really impair our ability to do the job that we've been sent to do. That's why we have the letter relating to the Elections Division asking for suggestions on how we might accomplish this reduction that's coming.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Secretary. Again, what we're voting on now does not reflect any future adjustments. So we're going to proceed on. You don't mind? Are there other questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have some concerns. Is there adequate funding here for you to do the voter miller verification and the cuts to reimburse counties for elections? Elections are one of our most important thing, and maybe not the place to cut, so we want to make sure our counties are adequately funded and you have proper funds.
Mr. Co-Chairs, Senator DeBoer, we had submitted $836,000, I think, was the total amount that should be reimbursed or given to the counties so that they can handle motor voters. That number has been reduced by $120,000 without explanation. We've made some contacts with the counties, and they feel that it is an unfunded mandate, that because they're taking a hit when they were promised that they would be fully compensated for the cost of motor voter.
Just a follow-up comment. I know a lot of the counties are restricted in their taxable that they can do, and some of them very unfairly by measures 50 and 47 to numbers they can increase. So I would like to hear further down the road about making sure they have adequate funds for their elections.
Certainly we can do a follow-up on that. Representative Gomberg.
Well, thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I mean, I'm perplexed in reading over this letter too, which I see is dated today. And I know, of course, that our professional staff has been working with the Secretary of State's offices and its subdivisions for some time now. One of the lines here, the letter from Mr. Trout, not from the Secretary, but from the Elections Director, Mr. Trout, addressed to the Ways and Means co-chairs and to the subcommittee co-chairs, says, "We're looking to you for recommendations as to which election services should be curtailed." I'm a bit perplexed by that. Mr. Secretary, you're asking us to tell your elections director, with you not being part of the conversation, which election services should be curtailed? Is that what this letter says?
Okay, just so we get back on track, we're not going to have that conversation right now. Okay. We're going to go back to what is at hand and the motion as is on the table. So anything that has to do with the letter as you present, this is not the proper body in order to fight that, make that point. We got your point here, but this is not the body to address that. We're going to be voting on the current package as represented by LFO. So I do appreciate, you, Mr. Secretary, you bringing that to our attention, but it is not the purpose of this body right now to address that concern, if you don't mind.
Certainly.
Thank you. So currently there's a motion to move the LFO recommendation to SB 5536. Are there further discussions?
I'm sorry, and respectfully, Mr. Co-Chair, again, I have to refer to part of this letter, and it says to us, as I read it, that in the current funding level that's recommended by LFO, the Secretary of State cannot accomplish its constitutional and statutory requirements. That's a sizable question. You're asking me to vote on a recommendation from LFO when the Secretary says he can't accomplish his constitutional obligations with the budget that we're being asked to vote on. I'm not sure where to go with that.
Well, just for a little clarification, The letter that the Secretary of State has delivered is something that will happen futuristic, not according to what's happening with the current budget that we're voting on. This is saying legislative later on, at the end of session, is the intent of this, but not if this happens later on. But this, we're dealing with the budget here that is already recommended by LFO, and the letter itself, what it addressed, does not affect the recommendation at this point. We're talking about after session, end of session. Mr. Bender?
Respectfully, Mr. Co-Chair, Mr. Bender just said he had not seen this letter.
Right, absolutely.
I would like to point out that the there's no difference here in the process that Ways and Means is using for the Secretary of State budget than any other budget. Every budget is passed, and statewide adjustments are then, to the extent that they're approved, to balance the budget included in the end of session bill. This has occurred frequently. I think it happens every session, actually. In some cases, there are larger adjustments than others, depending upon the budget situation. This particular budget is one of the few budgets that has general fund that is being recommended above the current service level. There will be reductions to that that will be made. These reductions will be, the same rules will be applied, that will be applied to all budgets. And this may cause, difficulties in management. We expect to see this in all state agencies. To the extent that any of these reductions become unmanageable, I think we'll need to look into that and see about potentially future adjustments in the short session.
Okay, so just for clarification, the reductions that are identified in this letter are not reflective of this budget that we are presenting right now.
Yes and no. Some of these are requests that were in the agency request above CSL that are not included in our recommendation. We do not have funding for them. Mostly these are requests that came in recently, some of them as recently as within the last week.
Okay, so I'm assuming that there are further questions from the committee that
this would clear up very quickly for me if the secretary or the elections director would simply say, if I vote yes today, will you be able to complete your constitutional statutory obligations?
Mr. Co-Chairs, Dennis Richardson, Secretary of State, Representative Gomberg, members of the committee, if this budget is voted yes today, we will be able to accomplish our constitutional statutory requirements. It's going to be tough, but we can do that. If there are adjustments that are bringing it down in the future, we're uncertain, and we would need advice on where we're going to make the cuts.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Are there any other questions, discussion? Are there any objections to the motion to move the LFO recommendation to SB 5536? Seeing none, motion is adopted. LFO.
Thank you, subcommittee. The next item that I would like to bring up is the key performance measures. We did start to have some discussion of those. Those are posted to OLIS. Again, in general, these key performance measures retain the key performance measures that the Secretary of State currently has. We did discuss with the Secretary, with their office, appropriate targets for these measures. We are recommending that these measures be continued. There is one that they are recommending to delete that we recommend that you approve deleting. And we do note that the Secretary has specifically said that they plan to review these and may come forward with requests for changes next biennium.
Mr. Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Colleagues, there's a reason state police do not get to keep the revenue they derive from their tickets. You can imagine why. I tend to agree with Representative Marsh on her comment as it relates to audit cost savings, in that we're creating a situation in which we're we're creating a goal that we're asking the Secretary of State to achieve that may or may not result in the best findings within their audits. And so I apologize. I should have reviewed this one a little closer. I'm uneasy with number two. And I don't know, Steve, how you want to proceed forward on that. You know, my job is to move these forward. I wonder if you have any input on what the co-chairs were thinking as it relates to item number two.
I have not heard of any concern that if you choose to delete this, that would be a problem. So if you would like to make any recommendations and the committee subcommittee approves them, those will be adopted, and the new set of performance measures will be the ones that the agency will be expected to report back to you on in 2 years.
So, Mr. Co-Chair, I would turn to some of us who have been around a while to get some input.
I was just going to say, if a motion were offered to delete that, I would support it.
Can I, Mr. Co-Chair?
Yes.
So, Representative Marsh, would you be all right with that?
Yes, please.
Okay. Motion by Representative Marsh to.
Oh.
If it's all right, do you mind if I make this motion?
Yeah.
All right. So, Mr. Co-Chair, I would move that we adopt the performance measures as presented by LFO, with the exception that of item number two, and that performance measure be deleted.
The motion is the Co-Chair Smith has moved to accept the LFO recommendations to the key performance measures with modifications, and the modification is to delete
item number two
on the KPMs for the Office of Secretary of State. Other discussions?
I have another. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So on a different topic, not on number two, I wanted to just ask a question about the customer satisfaction targets. So yesterday we had the Department of Revenue and their targets, for example, for overall customer service were 98%, current performance level of 13%. So we did not have a lot of time to talk about the difference between current performance level and how unachievable those targets are likely to be in the next year. But generally, in my line of work, when we do consulting, setting key performance measures and targets, you want the performance targets to be both achievable and meaningful for the organization. So I did not think yesterday that 98% represented an achievable target, but fine. Today, we have an overall performance, customer satisfaction performance measure of 90%, lower than 98% that was yesterday. And the current performance level is 90, is also 90%. So there's no sort of improvement involved in this target.
80%.
I think it's 90.
Overall.
So I'm just curious, what's the process for setting these targets, and why are there differentials for when, especially when the key performance measures are consistent, why are there differences there? It was just particularly noticeable given yesterday's presentation and today's.
Unfortunately, I can't give you any insight into revenues, key performance measures, and the difference between the targeted level and the performance level. I don't work on that budget, and I'm not able to discuss that. Typically, we do see that agencies do have pretty high target levels, as we would expect them to. In some cases, the activities of the agency may make it more difficult for them to achieve high values of these, because the nature of their activities in many cases may be enforcing particular laws or regulations that the persons who the agency interact with might prefer that they didn't do that. Because as a result, we do see some differences in targets. I found that generally targets are set at 90% or 95% level. Given the performance, recent performance, the fact that we have a new incumbent in the position, I proposed to the agency that maintaining 90% targets at this transition would be perhaps a recommended target level, and they did agree to this.
Okay. Any other questions? So the motion is from Co-Chair Smith. Is he moved to the LFO recommendations to key performance measures with modification, and the modification is deletion of item number 2 on the KPM. Are there anyone in opposition? Seeing none, motion carries. LFO.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. We are now at the point where I would just recommend a particular amendment. LFO recommends a budget of $10,773,265 general fund, $57,871,511 other funds, $5,194,107 federal funds, and 212 positions, 211.89 FTE, which is reflected in the Dash 1 amendment.
So, Mr. Co-Chair, I move adoption of the Dash 1 amendment to Senate Bill 5536.
Co-Chair Smith, move adoption of the Dash 1 amendments to SB 5536. Is there discussions? Any objections? Seeing none, motion is adopted.
Mr. Co-Chair, I move Senate Bill 5536 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Co-Chair Smith has moved SB 5536 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendations. Are there any discussions? Any objections? Seeing no objections, the chair will carry to the full ways means and on the Senate floor, on the House.
Rep. Nierman, will you carry this?
Sure, yeah, I'd be glad to.
Representative Nierman, thank you. And we are going to close the work session on SB 5536, Secretary of State. And we're going to move on to the next item on the agenda, which is public hearing work session on HB 2191 Alpha RA, which is relating to business entities.
Mr. Co-Chair, can we just take just the briefest of recesses, just 1 minute?
Okay. We're going to take a brief recess.
We just need.
No, I have to carry, so I'll say.
Yeah, I've got two carries.
So
how many of us are needed here?
We'll get all excused.
Yeah. Are you?
And we're back out of recess, and we are opening up a work session and public hearing and work session on House Bill 2191A relating to business entities and LFO, please.
Subcommittee members, this House Bill 2191 relates to business entities. You previously had a public hearing on June 6th. It probably seems like a lifetime ago. There was a public hearing and work session scheduled, but you did receive information at that time that there were some concerns, and you now have amendments that address those concerns. This is the bill that authorizes the Secretary of State's Corporation Division to investigate potential violations of business registration statutes. It is a bill that is designed to increase regulation of shell corporations. You heard some concerns that the non-fiscal provisions of the bill expanded the ability or the rights of persons to sue individuals on a corporate or board or in a limited liability corporation beyond what was intended. The new amendments are the same as the ones you saw last time, except they restrict the right of taking private actions in these cases to companies that meet the characteristics of being shell companies.
Okay, we have three people listed to do testimony. We have two people. Josie Cohen, is that correct? Please come forward. And also Sharon Hamstra. Or Hamstra, I'm sorry. I butchered that every time. I apologize. So please, before you begin, please state your name for the record.
Okay. Chair Senator Manning, Co-Chair Representative Smith, members of the subcommittee on general
government.
Okay. There we go.
Okay.
All right. My name is Josie Kerner. I'm with the organization All Volunteer organization, Tax Fairness Oregon. And I've done it, testified on this bill when it first came out in April, I believe it was April. And so here's my testimony. We are pleased to see that HB 91A shows show up on the agenda for today. Oregon should not complain about foreign tax havens when we remain one ourselves. The Portland Business Journal reports that the U.S. Treasury has called Oregon one of the four states most attractive to those persons seeking to hide illicit activity within the framework of shell companies, and that they can be used for a variety of white-collar crimes, including laundering money, dodging taxes, and financing terrorism. The Portland Business Journal's Matt Kish has done some excellent investigative reporting over the years, including a 2015 piece that connected a house in Aloha to more than 1,300 Oregon shell companies, making it the state's version of a Cayman Island hideaway of shell companies and a global web of hundreds of millions of dollars in fraud. Bill 2191 is designed by the Secretary of State's office to combat the fraud that shell companies in Oregon have been doing it since at least 2006. Most recently, the Business Journal says that Oregon is among the worst at policing the formation of shell companies, thanks to the state's light regulatory touch, commitment to quickly processing incorporation requests, and relatively low costs. It's time Oregon takes action on this. The bill forcefully addresses such abuse by requiring clear identification of owners, agents, and directors at the time of incorporation, and the company's physical address, not just a mail forwarding address, that can thwart law enforcement when companies commit financial and other crimes. It also requires higher annual fees that will help to defray the cost to investigate any suspect activity. Davis Wright Tremaine, partner Mark C. Phillips, who opposes HB 2191, reported on Friday, March 5th in the Portland Business Journal that HB 2191 would add unnecessary sand into the transmission of forming a company. Considering what's at stake in terms of the consequences of fraud, these requirements are a small price to pay to enable law enforcement to track down such costly illegal activity. It is a smokescreen to say that companies need less than full disclosure, or we will scare off legitimate business activity. On the contrary, only illegitimate companies fearing prosecution will be put off, and that's just what the bill is designed to do. Phillips goes on to state, why does anyone believe that someone who is willing to set up these shell companies to do nefarious things is going to suddenly come into the sunshine? Of course they won't. They will file the articles and make the certification made using a made-up name, and since the Secretary of State is neither required nor will have the resources to investigate, it is just going to create a pile of documents with certifications that are not worth anything. By this logic, we should not have stop signs, since poor drivers will not run stops anyway. But the recent amendments adds the resource, one full-time employee, and will use increased licensing fees plus $157,000 to cover the cost of investigating fraud, and holds the individual company's agencies personally liable for false statements and misrepresentation as to the nature of the incorporating business. It gives investigative and enforcement powers with limitations to the Secretary of State's office so that it will indeed have the resources it needs to investigate shell companies' fraud. Furthermore, as LFO Steve Bender states, these amendments modify the requirements for the Department of Revenue to recommend administrative dissolution of a corporation and allow the court to award attorney fees to the Attorney General for actions taken under the provisions of this bill. These are strong deterrent measures. Surely it makes good business sense to spend a small portion of what we are expected to collect from the offshore tax haven accounts to ensure that Oregon can no longer be used as a tax haven. We agree with LFO's recommendation and wholeheartedly support 2191 and all of its amendments.
Thank you, ma'am. Are there any questions? Okay.
Thank you, Co-Chairs Manning and Smith. My name is Cheryl Heemstra. I'm the Deputy Legislative Director at the Oregon Department of Justice. Representative Holvey wanted me to pass along thanks to the co-chairs for giving us time to iron out one last amendment for our good friends at AOI. So thank you for your grace for that. Just want to thank AOI for their quick and creative thinking on this, as well as the secretary, NFIB, and the Oregon State Bar for their participation in the bill. All of those are wrapped up into the -A10 amendments, and we commend those to you. We do believe this will help fight fraudulent and criminal uses of Oregon's businesses, which will help both our vulnerable Oregonians and the business community as a whole. Thank you.
Senator Johnson.
Just to be clear on the record, the amendments take out the private right of action.
Co-Chair, Senator Johnson, the amendments were worked out with AOI. They do not completely take out the private right of action. What they do is they limit the private right of action to a shell corporation as defined in the bill. Before, the bill applied to all corporations, whether or not they were shells, and I think that was the core of the concern. So it's now limited to just shell corporations.
And I believe we're going to hear from Ms. Earls.
I believe so. Okay.
Any other questions from the committee or the panel? Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Betsy Earl, please.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairs and members of the committee. For the record, Betsy Earls representing Associated Oregon Industries. And Ms. Hemstra is correct that that AOI is very happy with the amendments. We have taken out the private right of action as it pertains to all companies and applied it only to shell corporations, and our members are happy with that. I just wanted to express our appreciation to this committee for being willing to wait while we got that last detail ironed out, and especially to Representative Smith for helping us with that, and Representative Holvey, as well as the quick thinking of the Department of Justice, which we very much appreciate. So thank you all. We're happy with the bill and ready to go forward.
Thank you. Are there any questions from the committee? No. Thank you.
Thanks again.
Mm-hmm. All right. So I'm going to close out the public hearing for House Bill 2191 and open up a work session on House Bill 2191.
Mr. Co-Chair, I would move adoption of the A10 amendments to House Bill 2191.
Co-Chair Smith moved the adoption of the -810 amendments to HB 2191A. Are there discussions? Are there any objections? Seeing none.
Mr. Committee Chair, I move House Bill 2191-A as amended to the full committee with the due pass recommendation.
Co-Chair Smith has moved HB 2191-A as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Are there discussions? Any objections? Seeing none, need to get some carriers for this bill. Do I have any volunteers?
I'll take it.
I'll take it.
Holvey,
okay.
Holvey doesn't want to carry it.
Oh, it's Rep. Holvey's, isn't it?
I think so.
Yeah, yeah. Why don't we put him on there?
Well, some full.
Yeah. And we got Senator DeBoer. Senator DeBoer could be carrying it to the full ways and also to the Senate.
We can be the low table guys.
Yeah, the low table guys. So.
The committee bill, but I think it's probably Holvey will want to carry it.
Okay.
Sorry, Mr. Co-Chair, can you clarify who is carrying it to the full committee?
Senator DeBoer.
Thank you.
Or was it Holvey?
It was Holvey.
No, that was Holvey. I'm sorry. Holvey's going to the full and to the House. And Senator DeBoer will be taking it to the Senate.
There you go.
Appreciate it.
Okay. All right. So we're good. Squared away. All right. So we officially close out HB 2191, and we're going to be opening up a work session on HB 3361 relating to opening data standards. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair, co-chairs, members of the committee. I'll try. I know we're on a short time frame. HB 3361 establishes the position of Chief Data Officer, appointed by the OSCIO to maintain a web portal for state agencies to release publishable data. The A13 amendment requires state agencies to ensure that their use of proprietary software or creation of new databases doesn't impair the public's ability to inspect or copy records. And the -A14 amendment provides general fund appropriation to the department for the position of Chief Data Officer, and LFO recommends both of those amendments.
So, Mr. Co-Chair, I move adoption of the -A13 and the -A14 amendments to House Bill 3361.
Co-Chair Smith has moved the adoption of the -A13 and -A14 amendments to HB 3361. Are there any discussion? Senator Johnson.
Just a question. I don't have my computer with me. What's the fiscal?
Oh, thank you, Senator Johnson. It is $261,854 for the
biennium. And this, general fund, and this as a continuing obligation of the state, where's this money going to go, come from? Whose budget going forward, or will this remain a GF obligation? Is this going to be assigned to the governor's office or the chief data officer? Where going forward?
Co-Chair, Senator Johnson, it's my understanding this is a one-time allocation of general fund, and that will be determined at a later date.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, other further discussion? Senator DeBoer.
Thank you. Is there a -15 amendment?
Co-Chair, Senator DeBoer, there is a -15 amendment that's been proposed by the Secretary of State, I believe. It's not something the LFO is recommending at this time.
Okay.
Are there further discussions? Seeing no further discussions, are there any objections? No objections?
Mr. Co-Chair, I move House Bill 3361 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Co-Chair Smith has moved HB 3361 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Are there discussions? Senator Johnson.
Yes, and I wish that I could be more specific in articulating those. The Secretary of State and the Treasurer are both independently elected officers, and I haven't followed this closely enough to understand the interaction of the functions of their offices being tied into a state CIO and a state data portal. I wish that I were more technologically savvy to know how to frame a better question, but I believe in conversations with both of those offices, they have raised concerns. And I am happy to not drag the Senate President down here to vote for me today, but I will do this as a courtesy. I have some pretty considerable reservations about this and the fact that an amendment that appears to call out both the Secretary of State and the State Treasurer was rejected without an opportunity to hear about the amendment. So I just would like to express my reservations about proceeding absent the A-15s.
Okay. Are there further discussions? Representative Nierman.
Good. I like this bill. I co-sponsored it, and I'm fully behind it.
Okay. Representative Marsh.
Thank you, Co-Chair. I would just note there seems to be nothing in the meeting materials, and I don't think we've heard from them in testimony regarding those concerns that are apparently present in the amendment, but there's no fleshing out of what those concerns are or why on the record. So it would be very difficult to go forward with the amendment, I think.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Did anybody else get copies of the A-15 amendment?
They're online.
Okay.
And
is it possible at full Ways and Means to make an amendment if so desired? Because I'm a little bit without a lot of communication that I was kind of surprised by this, which seems a pretty innocuous amendment.
It's not very innocuous.
It's not impossible to make an amendment at always needs the preferences so that amendments be addressed, as you said, in subcommittee so that they can be heard. But that's the best.
Just to follow up, I don't think we really addressed them in committee, and I'm sure the co-chairs probably looked at it, so I'd ask the co-chairs to perhaps double look at that and communicate with the Treasurer and the Secretary of State, which are elected officials, and make such a recommendation if they deem so.
Senator Johnson.
We're fortunate that we have the sponsor of the bill as well as representatives from Treasury and the Secretary of State's office, and in the interest of the committee understanding what all of the full plan-a-play of issues are, given that some of us didn't hear the original testimony, if you would indulge us, could we at least have a comment from those offices?
Okay, if we get Secretary of State and Mr. Pettis, we'll bring you forward in a minute, please. Okay, please, for the record, state your name.
Good afternoon, co-chairs and members of the committee. My name is Steve Elzinga. I'm the Governmental and Legal Affairs Director with the Secretary of State. And the reason that this was not communicated before is it was a technical bill relating to data standards. That is not something that's normally in the purview of the Secretary of State or the Treasury Office. And it did not come to our attention until a statewide fiscal request was put out. Once it was put out, we contacted DAS and the state CIO's office and the Society of Professional Journalists, as well as Representative Nathanson, the sponsor of the bill. We have not heard any objections to the amendment, and it would preserve our constitutional independence for both the Secretary of State and the Treasurer.
So, Chelsea Broussard, Policy Director for the Treasurer's Office. I'll just add a little bit of explanation about what the amendment does. The amendment doesn't preclude us from having to follow the bill. What it says is that the Secretary of State's office and the State Treasurer's Office can do our own rulemaking for how to follow the provisions of the bill. And so we believe that that preserves our independence in that way. It gets at the same goals of what the bill is trying to achieve, but also allows us to preserve our independence.
Okay, let me ask a question. When was the Dash 15 amendment presented?
Ella?
I received it today, I believe.
Today?
Yeah.
Late? Okay.
It's got yesterday's date on it.
Oh, maybe late last night could be.
Co-chair, we received it back from Legislative Council yesterday, and I sent it over to your office and your fellow co-chair's office last night.
Okay. Any other questions?
So I have first a comment and then maybe a question out of it. But we keep bonking into this all the time on the IT committee. We bonk into this quite often about the status of the Secretary of State and the Treasurer with regards to IT stuff. And I'm supportive of the idea of the Secretary of State and the Treasurer and their independence as separate agencies, as kind of constitutionally distinct agencies. But I guess I kind of wonder, when it comes to IT, if there's really a distinction there. So maybe either one of you could offer me, in a policy way, I understand why you need to have your independence, but like, for instance, how you do data storage or what kind of open data source projects you have going on, how does that impact your independence, whether you're under the state CIO or not under the state CIO?
Representative Nierman, members of the committee, so what this bill would do is it would require us to send our data to a central website that's operated by the state CIO's office for publication. For example, we already publish our corporate registry data on the Secretary of State website, so that would result in additional work from our office, not only to update our own website, but also to send over information to the state CIO's website to update their website. We already publish all our campaign finance information on ORSTAR. We publish initiatives and referendums information as it comes in. I think the Secretary of State website has a significant amount of open data, you know, many of the archival records, et cetera. And so we feel that we are totally supportive of the goal of this bill. We want to increase transparency in open data. But there are constitutional concerns if, for example, the state CIO's office could tell us to publish our voter registration database. That would be something that we would oppose for privacy reasons, because we don't feel like the average Oregonian would want a fully searchable database of everyone's voter registration, voter history, address, name, date of birth, et cetera. And so there are privacy concerns beyond the additional constitutional concerns, and we feel like the experts in the elections division, for example, should be the ones to determine what level of privacy should be afforded to sensitive information, not the state CIO's office.
Okay, so thank you for that. So what?
Can I respond to that, Mr. Chair? I'm sorry, but I think that the Secretary of State's office. So in this example, you said of you don't think that the state of Oregon may possibly shouldn't publish their entire voter database online or whatever. You could still choose to do that. You're the custodian of that data, and you could still choose to do that, and we could still have one consolidated system that does that and say, no, I'm the Secretary of State, I'm a constitutional officer, and I'm refusing to participate in that. And I don't think that, the bill 3361 would require you to do that. It just requires that we have that central repository, right?
Representative Nierman, my reading of the bill is that by administrative rule, they could require us to send it over. We would, of course, refuse, which would result in a legal battle that would waste state resources with, there's no indication that the state CIO's office will do that. So I'm not
right.
at all.
Yeah. This is theoretical.
It's purely theoretical, but I'm just saying that there are real world consequences to that kind of authority structure, and the Treasury, I think, has additional sensitive information.
Yeah, Representative Nierman, the way that we've been approaching this is, so we contacted Representative Nathanson's office and sort of outlined our concerns related to exemptions related that were sensitive information related to cyber attack. And so giving us the authority to do our own rulemaking for those types of exemptions would allow us to take a look at the information that we are more familiar with and would let us maintain that authority over our information. And so the exemptions that we're concerned about are in the bill, but we currently don't have the authority to do rulemaking regarding that.
We, if I could just follow up with a comment, but we need to solve this problem once and for all, because we get this exact same amendment on every single IT bill. So we need to decide what the rule is somewhere. Maybe we need to have a lengthy court case and duke it out somehow there or something. But anyway, I'll let that go for now.
Mr. Co-Chair, what the chair is proposing to do is that we carry this bill over till tomorrow for consideration of the -15 amendment. Any objections? So we'll carry it over to tomorrow, consideration of the -15 amendments. We're going to now open up a work session on the last item on the agenda, which is SB 5541, which is the Treasurer's Office. And John, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Mr. Co-Chair, members of the subcommittee, before you is Senate Bill 5541. It's the primary budget measure for the Treasurer of the State. Attached in, or what you have in front of you, are the Legislative Fiscal Office recommendations. They are also posted on OLIS along with the amendment to this measure. The budget for the State Treasurer, just as an overview, is $2.5 million general fund, $82 million other funds, for a total funds budget of $84.5 million, 158 positions, 147.75 FTE. The budget is a $20.6 million or 32% increase from the 2015-17 legislatively approved budget, and a $16.6 million or 24.5% increase over the 2017-19 current service level. There are 37 more positions, or 30.6% more positions above the 2017-19 current service level. And if I make, Mr. Co-Chair, I will work through the various policy packages that get us to that point. On page one of the Orbitz work session papers is the overview of the agency's budget, which LFO just reviewed. Again, a total funds budget of $84.5 million, 158 positions, 147.75 FTE. The first policy package begins with the Treasury Services Division on page three. This is package 101, the Investment Solutions policy package. This is essentially phase two of bringing additional staff into the investments and other divisions. The package totals $10 million other funds, 32 positions, 23.81 FTE. The source of other funds is charges against primarily the trust funds, such as the Public Employees Retirement Fund, and other associated funds administered or invested by the agency under the direction of the Oregon Investment Council. There are, just at the high level, as noted in the Orbitz work session papers, there are resources added in specific sections. LFO will just review these at the high level. The Chief Investment Officer, there are 11 frontline staff added for 8.4 FTE. These are everything from senior investment officers to investment analysts. They are positions that will work on real estate investments, alternative investments, and other type of investments and trading. These positions are eligible for incentive pay, which is not included in the budget, which is estimated to be $400,000. There are also Director of Investment Operations. These, I believe, are categorized as mid-office level staff. There are eight being added for everything from performance analytics to senior investment accounting, senior investment accounting staff, and governmental accounting standard boards accounting activities, among others. The one note that LFO would have is that the one position for the Accounting Standards Board will also do some work for the Oregon Retirement Savings Board, because that board will have some of the similar requirements. There's Chief Compliance Officer staff added, six positions for 4.26 FTE. These are a compliance manager, investment compliance officer, corporate governance and policy officer, and compliance analyst. The chief information officer or chief information services, three back office staff. These are for desktop support, Citrix desktop support, and networks administration. Chief administrative officer, again, back office staff. Four positions are being requested and recommended, a project manager three, a human resource manager, an operations and policy analyst three, as a business analyst. And Mr. Co-Chair, again, this package totals 10 million other funds, 32 positions, 23.81 FTE. And again, these are the additional positions that are building on the basis of positions that either existed in the agency or were added during the 2015 session as phase one of this effort. LFO recommends this package. On page five is package 103, cybersecurity. This package adds additional resources to the information security program that already exists within the agency for cybersecurity. It adds two information technology staff, one for security operations and one for as a senior security analyst. Again, the revenue support this package, since it's other funds, is banking transaction fees, fees for managed portfolios, and other revenue sources. This package is for $2 million total, two positions, 1.5 FTE. On page six is the beginning of three consecutive packages, 106, 107, and 108, that relate to the finance division's cash management improvement renewal project you heard about extensively during phase one and phase two of the agency's presentation. These are also a continuation of policy packages from last biennium. This first package is the related to the local government investment pool. This project would modernize how local governments transact and make account inquiries into their short-term investments. The shorthand for this is that currently they're using a voice-operated system, and this would bring them into the 21st century using more of an automated system for their financial activities. The request is for $1.3 million, no positions or no FTE, and LFO recommends approval. Package 107 is the automated clearinghouse business systems renewal project, again, a subset of this overall cash management effort. This package relates to how modernizes how the state transacts these type of ACH payments. The request is for $600,000 other funds, and LFO recommends approval of this package. It's for a variety of things, vendor payments, implementation costs, and quality insurance oversight. On page 8 is the final package for this series. It's package 108, Core Banking Business Systems Renewal. This package relates specifically to modernization of the core systems and applications at the heart of the agency's cash management technology infrastructure. What this is a continuation of the business case to evaluate replacing those systems through modernization effort and doing some mitigation work. The package includes funding for mitigation, business case development, and quality assurance vendor. On page 9 is package 802. These are post-governor budget requests by the agency, and which are partially being recommended. This package adds one permanent full-time fiscal analyst 3 to serve as the agency's budget officer, one permanent full-time principal executive manager I to serve as the agency's chief operating officer, and one additional permanent full-time investment 2 officer. The package totals 1.2 million other funds, 3 positions, 2.84 FTE. The Oregon Saves program is the next program for which there's a budget division. The recommended budget for the Oregon Saves, which includes college and the ABLE program, is $7.7 million total funds, 5 positions, and 5 FTE. On page 11 is a policy package. There's several policy packages here which merit discussion. The two, there's a sequencing issue, but I will go over the first, which is an increase to the program. It increases the general fund for the program by $744,216, no positions and no FTE. This package does 2 things. It restores the agency to current service level, which will be discussed here shortly. And it also provides full funding for the agency's policy package request related to the ABLE program. On page 12 is package 801, an LFO analyst adjustment. The legislature in 2015 provided one-time startup funding for the ABLE program, as well as ongoing funding. The one-time funding, however, was not removed from the agency's budget, as is the practice for agency budgeting, even though it was noted. So this package removes the $310,250 that should have come out of the budget. Again, just to be perfectly clear, that reduction was restored in the prior package 105. So the package is at current service level plus $433,966 for complete funding for the ABLE program. LFO would also note that the ABLE program is currently working off of a general fund loan situation. So any general fund support that the agency receives for this particular program will eventually be repaid from the fees once the ABLE program has sufficient cash flow to sustain operations and begin repayment of this loan and the loan from the prior biennium. On page 13 is a request from the agency, package 803, the Washington State ABLE contract for $700,000 other funds. This package reflects the state of Oregon's efforts to do marketing and outreach activities for the state of Washington's ABLE program. The $700,000 is an estimate and recommended as a one-time adjustment. The contract has not been finalized. So this will give an opportunity to reevaluate this expenditure limitation during the 19 session.
Mr. Chair, that would be earned revenue paid to us by the state of Washington to market their program.
Mr. Co-Chair, members of the subcommittee, and Senator Johnson, that is correct.
Thank you.
On page 14 of the LFO recommendations is the Oregon Retirement Savings Program. The recommended budget is for $1.2 million general fund, 2 positions, 1.5 FTE. On page 15 is a policy package.
Mr. Chair, why such a big increase in that program? I need to say I was not a fan of that program, and now I'm seeing more general fund investment in it. I'm just trying to understand why.
Mr. Co-Chair, I'm sorry, Senator Johnson, which program are you discussing?
The Oregon Retirement. Isn't that the one you were just describing?
Yes. If I may, Mr. Co-Chair and Senator Johnson, may I have a moment to work through several issues here that will provide
clarity
to what you're maybe thinking of? The overall budget, strictly general fund, is $1.2 million, two positions, 1.5 FTE. The package 104 on page 15 is a restoration of the one-time phase-out of money we'll hear about here shortly to bring the program to current service level. It's $696,470, no positions or no FTE. On page 16, again, there was one-time money that should have been phased out of the budget but was not, that is taken out. So the net result is that the program remains at current service level. So,
thank you. That was helpful.
Mr. Co-Chair and members of the subcommittee, that concludes the LFO review of the agency's budget.
Senator Johnson.
This would be a question to either Co-Chair Smith or the professional staff. Am I to deduce that the previous impasse with regard to strengthening the internal investment processes has now been overcome, ergo the substantial apparent investment in positions and funding at Treasury?
I would let John answer that.
Mr. Co-Chair and Mr. Co-Chair and members of the subcommittee, Senator Johnson, this recommendation reflects complete funding for the agency's initiative to increase resources in the investment division. I believe the impasse you're maybe thinking about was to move these activities outside of state legislative budgetary control, and so that requires substantive legislation. That substantive legislation did not advance this session, so these are all resources within the under expenditure limitation and within the agency's operating budget.
You've answered both my questions. I only asked one, but you answered both of them.
You got our money's worth on that one.
Mr. Co-Chair, I would move LFO's recommendations to Senate Bill 5541.
Co-Chair Smith has moved the LFO recommendations to Senate Bill 5541. Discussion? Are there any objections? Seeing no objections, motion is adopted.
Mr. Co-Chair and members of the subcommittee, next are the agency's key performance measures and targets. They are in your work session papers. LFO recommends approval of the key performance measures and targets. An overview of the existing key performance measures by the agency is recommended prior to the an overall review of the agency's key performance measures by the agency is recommended prior to the 19th session. In addition, LFO recommends specifically that the agency proposed for the legislative session in 2019 a new measure for the Oregon Retirement Savings Program, a new measure for the Oregon Retirement Savings Board best practices, a common KPM for agencies with boards, a new measure for achieving a Better Life Experience Act ABLE program, and a new standard measure for the 529 Savings Board as well for their board best practice. And that's the LFO recommendation, Mr. Co-Chair.
Mr. Co-Chair.
So, Mr. Co-Chair, I move the LFO recommendation on key performance measures.
Co-Chair Smith moved the LFO recommendation on the key performance measures. Order discussions. Representative Faye.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. So I have a couple of questions, comments on number 8 and 9, which have to do with 529 savings plans. First off, I think 8 and 9 are completely redundant with each other, and there's no reason why we would measure both the number of accounts and the percentage. So if there's any commentary on why we have two measures that essentially measure market penetration of 529 savings plans, that would be good.
Mr. Co-Chair, members of the subcommittee, representative, I think this is one of several reasons why LFO believes a review is in order. There is a similar issue with KPMs number one and two on investment returns that maybe could be streamlined and standardized. Sometimes what happens is KPMs become stale, do not receive the attention they need to. The agency has been very forthright about the need to review these on their own initiative, and so and they're well prepared to do that. And so I, if I may, representative, I have a feeling you'll see some consolidation of these measures during the 19th session as a proposal for you, the legislature to consider.
Okay, thank you. Follow-up.
Follow-up.
So one thing I'd like to put on the record then as we're thinking about a full review is that there's all kinds of data out there about 529 college savings plans about how they are disproportionately used by wealthy members in our state and our country. And so the benefit of this tax break accrues not to the middle class, but to upper middle class and wealthy Oregonians. So what I would love to see is something, a performance metric that looks at not just the overall market penetration of this, but the penetration of people who are in lower and middle class families. They can be an incredibly important tool. There's also all kinds of data that shows that kids that have 529 plans have better academic performance and are more likely to go to college, no matter what kind of family they're from. So they can be a really important tool. There are states that are doing really great experiments with how do you increase usage of these amongst middle and lower class families. So I would love to think about that being a measure of success and not just overall market penetration. For the record.
Mr. Co-Chair and members of the subcommittee, I think that's an excellent point. The one thing about this particular program is, you know, there's a tax expenditure side of this program. Hmm. So to get right to the information, some of the information you're looking for, there's quite detailed tax information available that could be looked at as the basis for a solid KPM.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you. Agreed. Are there further discussions? Are there any objections to the motion? Seeing none, motion carries.
Mr. Co-Chair and members of the subcommittee, there's one budget note. The budget note is an investment solutions feasibility study. The budget note reads as follows. The state treasurer is directed to report to the legislature, or the state treasurer reported to the legislature in 2017 that enabling more internal management by investing in investment management program resources will reduce overall costs and likely provide improved net return to the funds under management. State treasury is directed to report to the legislature in 2019 on the actual cost savings that and increased net investment returns derived from the legislature's investment in the investment division and the general administration of the agency, as well as produce a feasibility study supporting continued investment in the investment division. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair.
Mr. Co-Chair.
Yeah, really quick before I give my motion, John, give me the rationale. Why are we producing a feasibility study?
Mr. Co-Chair and members of the subcommittee, the one thing that the agency and the Oregon Investment Council have undergone an extensive analysis of the issues at hand with the investment division, but one thing in the legislative fiscal office's opinion that is missing is kind of the feasibility study or the cost-benefit analysis of where it makes sense to, you know, what resources will optimize what performance. And so we would just, that's the genesis of the budget note, is to say, you know, what options are there? For example, could some of these be entirely outsourced? Should they be insourced to the investment division? Are there other options available? And all this would just be a prelim to what would LFO's understanding is a third phase or a third round of investment in positions within the investment division. So it just helped the agency support their position as they come into 19.
You're awesome. Thank you. I move the LFO recommendations on the budget note.
Coach Smith moved the LFO recommendation on the budget note. Are there further discussions? Are there any objections? Seeing none, motion is adopted. Go ahead.
Pardon me, Mr. Co-Chair. Mr. Co-Chair, LFO recommends the -3 amendment, which is a budget of $2,477,055 general fund, $81,975,382 other funds, and 158 positions, 147.75 FTE, which is reflected in the Dash 3 amendment. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair.
So, Mr. Co-Chair, I move adoption of the Dash 3 amendment to Senate Bill 5541.
Co-Chair Smith moved the adoption of the Dash 3 amendment to Senate Bill 5541. Are there questions? Are there any objections? Seeing none, motion carries.
Mr. Co-Chair, I move SB 5541 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Co-Chair Smith moves Senate Bill 5541 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Are there any objections? Any discussion?
Thank you, Chair Manning. So I brought this up with the treasurer. There's kind of been a very steep increase in the dollar amount spent on foreign travel, and I asked him what this was for, and his explanation passed the laugh test. But I'm kind of concerned about that as being an issue with this agency, that all of a sudden they have a very steep increase in foreign travel, and the treasurer kind of indicated that. That it would kind of continue to increase. So that kind of concerns me in a tight budget environment. So I'll still be a yes on this, but I just wanted to express my concerns.
Thank you.
Apropos the committee's earlier conversation about some of the cost containment implementation, I think there was very clear scrutiny by the group of legislators working on that travel period, let alone international travel, would need to be curtailed. And I didn't have the same knowledge that you have right now about international travel. I would welcome a greater explanation as to why that is occurring. I could understand going to major markets, New York, that I get. But I would certainly be curious to see a list of where international travel has occurred and the rationale behind it. The last time we had a significant bump in international travel, it was sending an ODOT employee all over the world talking about congestion pricing. So I'm quite dubious about international travel.
Okay. Further discussion? Are there any objections to the motion? Seeing none, motion carries. I will have anybody?
Okay.
Okay, to the Senate floor, and how about the full ways?
Sure.
Senator DeBoer will be carrying to the full and to the Senate floor. Representative Faye?
Sure.
Okay, Representative Faye will be carrying it on the House. With that, we're going to close the work session on SB 5541, and no other business at this time. We will be adjourned.
And see, Mr. Co-Chair, just really quick, I want John to know again how much we appreciate him. We're coming to the end here, and I'd be remiss if we didn't get that on the record. John, you're A+. You
great
really
job,
are.
John.
I echo that, too.
And Michael.
Yes. And to the committee itself, thank you for your indulgence, and we are adjourned.
Good job, John.
Adjourned.